Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. Wow. Another happy hour for the community. We are fighting a war. This is no conflict. This is the real deal. We must continue to fight this battle because we are at war. It's a shame, but unfortunately, we are at war. We have to change the way we do business. I want to say this before I go on. We've been getting rave reviews about the doula. And we have a lot of questions today that they won't answer. They claim they're going to be listening for them. We got comments in the chat room. It's important for me to educate you on what a doula do. The track star, she died because, you know, it's unfortunate, but she died, you know, giving birth. We want to make sure that the people are listening, that we're doing the things that we supposed to do to help our black community, because it's crucial. We never get the medical service we need because we don't have enough black folks doing these things. And my thing is that we have to reach out to people and educate them on what a doula do. You know, can you imagine the lives that the doula save? You know, and then they also get an opportunity to keep an eye on things, make sure things are good emotionally for the person giving birth. All these things are huge. But before we get to Ms. Moore, I want to thank everyone for all the listeners that has been tuning in. I tell you, this has been huge. You know, I can tell that people want to know about a doula. I know that people want to know what's going on. And you know me, I'm going to give it to you, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And one of the things that we've been asking people to do, if you have any questions, put it in the chat, or you can write me a letter, or you can put it in my mailbox. Whatever you choose to do, I will make sure I get it. I'm going to read letters that I have received. But anyway, that's about a doula. But let me fast forward this to something a little bit different, because we have been talking about the county clerk here and how racist she is, and how what racist she have been to black folks. Black folks can't ask her no questions. If they do, they go over there, they mistreat the black people, and most black folks are not going to say something or anything, say anything, you see. But they'll tell me and want me to go say something. And then when I get my head cut off, they're going to say, well, somebody should have done something. But anyway, but I'm not. Because my whole mission has been ordained by God. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. There's no way. No way that we could have this many victories as a black person with no resources. You see, with no resources. I have done everything that God has asked me to do for my people. And I'm going to continue doing what is right for my black brothers and sisters. I know it's hard for people to believe that we don't do things for money. We do things because it's the right thing to do. That's more important than anything else, you see. And that's what people can't see. See, most of my life I've been fortunate, you know. And I really appreciate God for leading me in that direction because he had really stepped out on a limb and really propelled me to a new level. Never would someone like Cornell, Princeton, Yale, Harvard, University of Pennsylvania want me to come speak. A black man called, but I don't hold them up. I call a white devil right in front of them. Because if you're a devil, if the shoe fit, you got to wear it. And I'm going to read this quick letter that was written about Sharon Tyler, the county clerk. And it's really sad more than anything else that, you know, you can't go to these people and get help, even though they're being paid to help you. You can't go. It's just like, you know, if there was a problem, most likely you would have an all-white jury. And an all-white jury can never be a jury of your peers. But they try to brainwash you into thinking that an all-white jury is a jury of a black person peer. It's not. But they have to answer for this. You see, they, you know, here on earth, they in power. You see, everything that we do, we have to go to them. Because we failed to build our own. We used to have our own neighborhoods. We don't have neighborhoods anymore. We don't have them. Let me read just real quick about what she said. I'm going to read one. And look, it's so many now that, you know, when you think about all the letters that have been written, I probably within the last week got about 20 to 25 letters about her and Trenton Bowen. But I want to talk about her right now because I think it's important because nobody is going to talk about white folks being a racist, not down here they're not. Very few people call a spade down here. And I'm obligated to call a spade a spade. But hear what she said. She said, I went to the clerk's office in St. Joseph, Michigan. I wanted to talk to the clerk about some things that I did not know about. Bowden, she said, just some things, you know. She was in her office. She wouldn't send anybody out to talk to me. Nobody wanted to talk to me. And I'm sitting there for over 35 minutes, and not one person asked me, what can they help me? I know that this is a daily routine. I know this is what they do because they didn't think nothing was wrong. So I asked the person, I said, could you ask, I would like to speak with the clerk. Is she available? She came back and didn't say a mumbling word. I said, is she available? I kept asking her. Now, I have been there now almost an hour. And she still has not come and asked me, what do I want or how can I help you? None of these things. But if a white person goes over there, they be breaking their neck to try to help them. But they do not help black folks. I'm going to close that on that note because here's where we go. Some of the stuff she said here is some tough stuff. And but I just wanted to hit on that because I thought that was crucial that black people need to understand. And they'll write me. They'll write me and expect me to go over there and deal with them. And I will. I will when I go over there. I would definitely deal with them and call them out on it. And they get mad. They'll call, you know, I guess they'll call their friends, the sheriff, the bomb, but I don't care. Black folks, you're more important to me. And I'm going to do everything in my power to help you. This Sharon Tyler is a known racist. She's been a racist all her life. She's a Trumper, you see. But we're in Trump country down here. People don't know this. This is Trump country. Racism is out of control here in the city of Benton. But let me move on. I want to talk about this Trenton Bowen guy. He claimed that I had threatened him. Well, if he ever get in my face and get out of pocket, I deal with him. I will. But I'm not going looking for him. But I know who he is. This letter was written in reference to him, Reverend Edward Pinkley. I am surprised that he was elected to be on the school board. Once he became a school board member, I took my children out of that school. I will not allow my children to go to the city of Benton Harbor school area schools as long as you have people on the board like that who don't mean our children any good. Never did. He's not smart enough to be on someone's school board and classified as an educator. I would not waste my time even writing this letter to you in reference to him, but I know that you know what to do. See, anytime you have a trend boy running around here, he's a butt kisser, but running around here doing what he's doing over your children and you accept it, then you got the problem. I would not send my children to Benton Harbor Area School as long as he's a board member. I would not, myself. And I'm pretty sure that most of these letters are talking about them not taking their children out of the Benton Harbor Area School. Here's one that she said her cousin's children was attending Benton Harbor Area School, and she took her children out. They would not be going there in August, September, because they do not want to have anything to do with that trend born. They don't want to have nothing to do. I mean, I'm shocked that we would stoop so low, someone like him. I wouldn't vote for him. But I'm shocked. I am shocked, you see. But we must make sure we take care of our children. And stop playing this game. This is real. This is no joke. This is the real deal. We can no longer sit around and allow our children to be miseducated and think it's all right. Be done. This guy, I would never, ever allow anyone I know to attend Benton Harbor Area School, as long as this guy is on the board. But people don't run. And people don't run for office. This is what we get. We get a trend board, you see. This guy has been robbed of himself. He don't even know who he is. So how he's going to be on the board for our children? He voted not to provide a boiler to heat the school up in September. I mean, what kind of nut would do something like that? Want your children to be cold? They entered the school, the winter session. They had to wear their gloves, coat, boots, scarf in the classroom as they sit. And nobody in the community even spoke up about it. Oh, there was somebody. There was Elnora. She spoke up. She actually challenged them and got angry about it because it was all right with the other board members. You see, that's the sad part. Wow. But anyway, I do have great news. We have another candidate for the Sambo of the Year Award. It's getting crowded, but you still got until July 15th. You still got until July 15th to nominate someone and bring them into the fold. So far, we have the mayor, Marcus Muhammad, who won the Sambo of the Year for the last 2 years, followed by Ron Singleton, the one who stole the radio station and getting lieutenant pay, and won the lieutenant when he retired. So after he's stealing money from the residents of Benton Harbor. Yeah. Then we have the couple, the father, the mother and the son, Dwayne Cease and my letter Cease. We got both of them. Both of them, you know, they got a lot. They got over 10,000 votes last time. It was a pretty close race, you know. Even though Muhammad won, it was a close race, you know. I mean, everybody got 10,000, just about. Judge Mayfield, she got about 9, but she was there. But anyway, we got Trimborn. We got Sharon Henderson, also been nominated, along with the chief of police, Dan McGinnis, and also Judge Mayfield, the baby snatcher. She's been snatching children for over 20 years from our community. And it's one of the biggest money makers that you can do. That's a big business. You see, everybody don't know that. When they turn people over and give them to other families, there's a lot of money is changing hands there. So we have to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to do to protect our children. You know, these young girls are having these babies, you know. And that's why a doula is so important, that help guide these girls, help them, because they don't know. Most likely their mother don't know. You're having babies at 13, 14. Mama probably had a baby at 13, 14. And it's a chain. That chain got to be broken. And it's not going to be broken until someone come in and educate these people on that level. We have to tell them. We have to tell them what they need to do. And if we don't tell them, they don't know. See, one thing about black folks listen to white folks, you know. You know, that's why, you know, all the shooting, the drive-by shootings you hear now, it's within the black community. Because they will kill you just by looking at them. And for over 450 years, we've been beaten with a whip that put marks on your back for the rest of your life. And we don't say nothing. It's happening today. They still doing the same thing, but doing it differently. They kill us in the courthouse, the justice system. And this is a fact. I would never see justice in my lifetime. Never. I would never see it in operation. Never. It's never going to happen. You know, because they don't have to. We have the power, but we don't execute that power to make them do what is right. The police killing. You see, police are never going to go to prison for killing a black person, because you, in their eyesight, you're still property. They might get one or two just to pacify you, but the majority of them, they're not going to jail. They're not going to do it. That's how they do it. With the educational system, same stuff with the educational system. They're doing the same thing. They're killing us educational-wise. They don't want us to have no profession. They don't want no doctor, no black doctors. They'll do anything to stop that. They don't even want black teachers. They don't want black teachers. They don't even want anything that's professional. They want to be in control of it. And that's what they do. They look at that. Everything that you do, you almost have to go to them. You have to go to them. Then they make the decision whether they're going to do it or not, even though it might be your money. Paying taxes over and over and over and over again. It took us over 450 years to get where we at today. And we're nowhere. Nowhere. You know, you get some black guy come, oh, we done came a long way. No, you haven't came nowhere. And it's unfortunate that we think the way we think. You know. And they know. If you can't take it, you're not going to get it. These devils, they'll do anything, you see. And don't expect justice. Whenever I go on trial or do something like that, I don't expect justice. Matter of fact, I really don't care, because I know the mission is ordained by God. I don't need it. Well, here's what I want. I want God to give me, when I die, give me the privilege of walking these devils to hell, to the gates of hell. That's all I want. That's all I have. I mean, all of them. black and white. It don't make no difference. These Muhammads, these Trinborns, these Ron Singletons, these Dwayne Seats, Miletta Seats, Judge Mayfield, that Dennis McGinnis, the chief of police, Sharon Henderson, and, Michael Sebbett, these Dennis Wiley, John Hammond. These are the people who I'm asking God to give me the permission. Because Wiley said that I have a strong connection with God, and he was right. He didn't know what he was saying, but he was right. He said, "You got the strongest connection with God I have ever met." He said these words. He uttered these words. And the only thing I can say, you are absolutely right. So I'm looking forward to walking your butt to the gates of hell. And on that note, let me bring in my first guest, Ms. Moore, and she's going to talk about the doula. And at the end, when she gets through with her presentations, I have some questions that I know these guys want me to answer. Also, if you have more questions, I may not get to them today. We'll come back next week and we'll do some more. So let's bring in the one and only Miss Moore. Miss Moore, talk to us. Tell us what's
greetings
going on. Yes.
Welcome to the Black Doula Report, where we celebrate the power and strength of Black families. I'm your community correspondent, Ms. Janelle Moore, founder of Sacred Blackstone Doula Services, Affirm Life. I'm a Black doula dedicated to advancing reproductive justice for Black parents everywhere. I would like to talk about today the protection of Black women and children. I would like to talk about how we are dying discriminately in the hospital. I was addressed recently and asked, why do I only talk about Black mothers and why is it so significant for me to protect Black mothers, and is that the only race of people that I help? Unfortunately, the statistics are very specific when it comes to Black women and children dying. We are the highest. The Black women and children are the highest in statistics, dying at three and four times the rate of any other race, not because of any other reasons other than systemic racism. There isn't any behaviors or characteristics or any anomalies in health that would cause the race, the statistics to be higher in the Black community. So specifically, I work with Black women and children, but I have no problem birthing babies with anyone else. I want to be clear about that, that my goal is to bring healthy children in the world, but the statistics are very specific that Black women and children are dying.
Amen.
My motto is empowering Black families one birth at a time. We believe that every Black birthing person deserves to have a knowledgeable and compassionate birth system during one of the most transformative experiences of their lives. So doulas are trained non-medical professionals who provide physical, emotional, and informational support to expectant mothers and their families during pregnancy, childbirth, and the postpartum period. We're at home with you and in the hospital. Doulas are part of the medical team and not considered to be counted as a visitor. The specific services provided by doulas can vary depending on the needs and preferences of the individual client and the skill set of the doula. As a Black doula, we understand the unique challenges that Black birthing patients face within the medical system, and we are here to provide culturally responsive care that centers to your needs and desires. Systemic racism in the medical system impacts Black people disproportionately. This systemic racism manifests itself in various ways, such as a lack of access to health care due to inability to afford treatment, inadequate and delayed diagnosis because of the stereotypes and assumptions by providers, and misdiagnosis due to biases against Black people. These factors often lead to disparities in health care for black people, including higher rates of infant and paternal death, higher rates of certain chronic diseases like diabetes and hypertension, and overall lower quality of health care for black patients. And Benton Harbor, Michigan is one such community that has been affected by high rates of infant and paternal mortality and systemic racism. Don Tynes at Benton Harbor Health Center is currently working with the doulas as a response to this issue, providing doula support and UTI testing to expectant mothers. The Pochette Imhotep Mother Baby Initiative was created to decrease or prevent maternal and infant death. If you have any questions or want to gain access to doula support to the Pochette Imhotep Baby Initiative, please call Benton Harbor Health Center at 1-269-926-8535.
Wow,
black women across the income, black women across the income spectrum from all walks of life are dying from preventable pregnancy-related complications at 3 to 4 times the rate of Hispanic white, 3 to 4 times the rate of non-white Hispanic women. The death rate of black infants is now, the death rate for black infants that of infants born to non-Hispanic white mothers. Black women have no genetic disposition or behaviors or health concerns that are so different than any other race in this country that attributes to the high statistics. It's not race, it's systemic racism that plays a huge factor in the cause of high numbers in maternal and infant mortality. A birth plan is a major source that can help address these disparities by ensuring black women have an active voice in their own care during pregnancy and labor and delivery. So a birth plan is just your simple wishes written down on paper. You want to know the facility. You want to know about your physician. You want to know who your birth team is. You want to be very specific. A birth plan can guide in discussions of healthcare providers and ensure the pregnant person's wishes, values, and needs are considered. This can help black women and their partners feel more empowered and less vulnerable in the face of a healthcare system that often disregards their perspectives and minimizes their concerns. It's very important when you're making a birth plan that you really read and investigate what types of births and interventions that are going on at your healthcare facility. You want to know how far away it is. That all of these things will later on answer all of your questions for your birth. You want to know what type of procedures and precautions you'll have to go through. All of these things will offer you options. It will show you options that you will have in the hospital, because there's a lot more options. You have a lot more options than you think. A lot of times doctors don't have time to present every single option and different option that you would have in the hospital. So they give you the mainstream option. Let's say epidural. Epidural is always talked about, but never any other incentive is offered really to black women. So we want to make sure that we're able to make conscious, educated, knowledgeable decisions about what we're doing to our bodies in the hospital. A birth plan is a major source that can help address disparities by ensuring black women have a voice in their own pregnancy, during pregnancy, labor, and delivery. A birth plan can guide discussions with healthcare providers and ensure that the pregnant person's wishes, values, and needs are considered. This can help black women and their partners feel more empowered and less vulnerable in the face of the healthcare system. A birth plan can also help ensure the needs of black families and infants are taken into account during the birthing process. Infants born to black mothers are at an increased risk of postpartum birth, low birth weight, death before first birthday, and other complications that can increase infant mortality rates. By outlining a plan of care that takes into account factors such as identifying the birth team and cultural needs, postpartum healing, breastfeeding support, and the safe sleep practices, black parents may be may be able to reduce the risk of negative health outcomes for their families by using a birth plan. So a birth plan is a simple tool that can play a major part on the outcome of your birth. A lot of times you get into these spaces and we're unable to feel comfortable talking to, you know, we're surrounded by white people. There's not a lot of room for, you know, to say, hey, you know, I'm feeling like this or that. So having a birth plan and having your decisions written down already, and you're already knowledgeable because you've read up on, you know, all, everything that you've written down, and bringing it forth to the doctor really helps change the outcomes of pregnancy. So furthermore, a birth plan can also help the providers make informed decisions about the medical interventions and procedures of labor and delivery, which can sometimes be overused or misused. And that's very important. So the overuse of interventions such as like C-section or induction can increase the risk of complication and may potentially lead to maternal mortality or morbidity. Then you also have the underuse of interventions or medications, which delay care and can also lead to poor outcomes for Black mothers. So it could either go both ways. Either they're not giving you enough medication, and or they're not giving it at all. And then this is really scary. And having someone there, a part of your birth plan, having someone advocate for you, knowing exactly what you're facing up against, will just take a little bit of your time, but will take you a long way in your pregnancy and your delivery and also your healing outcomes. So I want to close by saying having a birth plan, Black mothers can advocate for themselves and their infants, which can help reduce the likelihood of medical complications and infant mortality. The birth plan can also create a supportive and empowering voice for the Black mothers during what can be a most vulnerable, stressful time. Education awareness surrounding birth plans and their potential benefits is crucial for addressing and reducing maternal and infant mortality rates among Black mothers by ensuring that healthcare providers are knowledgeable about the support of birth plans. Black mothers can have the best experience and outcomes during childbirth. So we can continue to save Black mothers, saving Black babies, and saving lives. Thank you, Reverend Pinkney.
Hey, thank you so much, so much. I mean, it's beautiful. But let me ask you this question. I got about five questions that I'm pulling out.
All right.
You said having a birth plan. Now, let me think about this for a second. Okay, the only thing that most of the young Black girls know about is going to the health department over here. And what they do, basically nothing. But how could you, and since the health department, they're being paid to do this, how can a doula work with the health department so that they can, so we can start doing more things for Black folks?
Well, the interesting thing is, since Biden brought in the, I call them Biden bucks, I think it's $741 million for doula training and also to teach Black doulas to come in. There's been an influx of doulas everywhere. So in some health departments, they are bringing in the doulas to work with. Here in Grand Rapids, I heard that they were working with the grieving patients who have lost children. They're bringing in doulas to work with them. So there is a small movement of doulas, but again, it is not Black doulas. It's not doulas of color. These are majority white women that are coming in and filling those spaces again. So that's why it's so important to have platforms like yours to bring awareness to tools that Black women can use to give their voice a volume in spaces, in white spaces like the hospital institution.
That sounds so good to me. What I don't understand, to me, just by listening to you talk, a doula is crucial. Especially for these young girls, these girls 14, 15 years old having babies, They don't know, you know. And then you go, and why would these white dudes be in a black community? Is that because there's not enough black dudes?
There's not enough black doulas. There is not enough black doulas. And there's a lot of doulas that are looking for women to work with to finish up their training. So connecting mm-hmm. with doulas right now while doulas are going through training, the services are a lot cheaper, and you're getting quality service at a cheaper rate. So it will be a great time to find black doulas and hook up with them and to learn how to care for yourself, because like you're saying, a lot of people don't know how to or what to do before you have the baby or even after you have the baby, because a lot of women are dying right after birth. They're going home and they're bleeding to death. They're having a lot of complications, waiting on doctor phone calls. Doulas come to your house and they visit you. We know when to identify when there's something wrong. We come to your house, we help clean up, we help you with postpartum depression, we help you with breastfeeding, we prepare meals for you prior to giving birth so you're not overwhelmed with postpartum depression. That affects 70% of women that leave the hospital and there's zero resources for, which is very strange to me that 70% of women are leaving the hospital carrying babies and they are depressed. So like you said, that we need resources. And again, these statistics that we talk about are very, very specific, and they are, it's a problem in our community. It's our problem. I'm a black woman. It's my problem. I have my own children. I have my own birthing story. So, We need to identify the problem and find a solution very quickly, because there's money out there to help, but again we're put in a situation where we have to go to middle-aged white women, get trained, and learn the colonial way and bring it back to our communities. And I think we're beyond them patting us on our head and them teaching us what to do when we've been doing this from antiquity. So
absolutely. And one of you hit on this. One of this guy questioned, it's a dude that's doing this, not a woman. He said, is it true that most of the women don't die in the hospital, they die at home?
They die at home. You mentioned Go ahead. You mentioned earlier, I think her name is Tori Bowie, the track star,
right. A
three-time Olympic medalist, was laboring at home and died in her house, was found dead, days later. And I don't think the baby survived either. So, yes, these women die at home. I believe Dr. Wallace from the CDC, she also died at home waiting for a callback from her doctor after she became preeclamptic. She was an elite epidemiologist for the CDC and worked on black disparities, which it breaks my heart to even talk about her because she is everything that we're talking about right now. We're talking about black birth. We're talking about saving black babies. And here she is, a black woman working for the very institution that does the counting of disparities for black people, the CDC, the Center of Disease Control, an elite scientist. She died waiting for a doctor to call back.
Wow.
She died.
Go ahead.
Well, she died in the baby. In this case, the baby did live. Her son, she delivered a son, Soleil, but we're talking about someone with, she wasn't poor. She didn't have terrible health insurance. She had everything golden. She had a support system. She had everything going for her. She was waiting for her doctors to call back. Had she had a doula to stop by and noticed that she was preeclamptic and her legs were swollen disproportionately, she would have been taken to the hospital immediately, and possibly she would have lived and be a mother to her child.
Wow, that is tremendous. And here's a question: Is it true that wealth does not make much of a difference whether the person is black or white, or do it make a difference?
It only makes a difference if you're white. If you're black, it doesn't make a difference at all. You can be wealthy, you can be educated, uneducated. It doesn't matter. The status, you're still at risk. You're at a higher risk than any other race. So we have to be careful, and we have to know that we're at war, and we're dying at an alarming rate, and we're dying in institutions that's claiming that they're helping us. And there are women out here that have claimed for years that they've been helping us, but if you look at their statistics, they've only been helping black people since George Floyd and Breonna has died.
Wow, that is something. And your job, like as a doula, you provide physical, educational, and emotional support.
That's correct. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'll finish up the question later.
So when we talk about physical support, we're talking about laboring positions. We're walking with you. We're making dinners with you to prepare for birth afterwards. My company personally makes sure that you have 7 meals in your home when you come home from your delivery, because you're going to be overwhelmed with breastfeeding and taking care of an infant and trying to shower. You're probably not going to have time to feed yourself. So one of the things that we take off from being overwhelmed, we make sure that you're prepared for postpartum delivery. So all of those all of these things help with postpartum depression or help prevent postpartum depression, helping you not be overwhelmed and feel more supported.
Wow, that is tremendous. And this is before, during, and after childbirth. Is that correct?
That's correct, both in the hospital and at home. So we start with you at home, and we follow you all the way through delivery. And a lot of us stay around. We can stay up to 5 years so that you can continue to call us and talk to us. Doulas become like a friend, a sister. Your relationship with your doula becomes a lifetime companionship.
Wow, that is huge. Hey, listen, I want to thank you so much. I tell you, I get so excited when you come on, because I really enjoy what you bring to the table. And listen, and I got all these questions, but we don't really have the time now, but I'm going to maybe we'll have some more time so you can ask some of these questions. But now I'm going to bring in my good friend, Dr. Tan, but we'll talk Monday. And here's one question I want you to don't hit on it now, but let's just deal with money. It says when a mom have blood pressure, when a mom's blood pressure get too high, you don't have to talk. Let's talk about it on Monday.
Okay, no problem. Thank you, friends.
Oh, y'all, yeah, you're doing it. You definitely stretching my imagination. And these listeners, and these are mostly men. These are not ladies who ask these questions. But it's going down. On that note, we will talk soon. I will talk to you on Monday, and I'm going to bring my good friend in, the one and only, Dr. Donald Tynes. He should be given the Nobel Peace Prize. That's what he should be given. My man, Dr. Tynes, talk to me. Tell me what's going on in your world.
All right. It's good to have Janelle Sankofa on to saving black babies, saving black lives. That's so important, saving black mamas, because of this overwhelming systemic attack that's going around globally against trying to decrease the number of African descendants or melanated skinned people. And we have to look at that war has been declared, because the cemeteries don't lie. The body count tell the truth in terms of how the people are attacked. And we have to start embracing the term of DOSA, D-O-E-S-A-A, D-O-E-S-A-A, DOSA. And that means Descendants of Enslaved Africans in America. descendants of enslaved Africans in America, because we have a unique history that can be compared to any other people, any other group. No other group has went through what we've done, where we've been considered animals, where the European American is performing in their minds bestiality when they were having sex with our 10-year-old daughters and our black women. They thought that they were doing nothing when they branded black men and black women, treat them like cattle, because in their minds they were three-fifths human, and that's why the founding fathers put in the Constitution that is three-fifths human. So people get twisted when they read the Constitution and it says we the people. You know, when a black person says that, that's ignorance, because that Constitution was wrote, you were considered an animal, but a high-level animal, three-fifths human, and that's why in the three-fifths compromise in the southern states, it was said that that's, well, if you have five black slaves, we'll let that be three votes. So it takes five black people to make three votes. See, that's part of your Constitution. Part of the Constitution says, the 13th Amendment says, we're not going to end slavery. We're going to pretend we're going to end slavery, and that if they get arrested and go to prison, then they're going to be reclassified as slaves again. And that law is on your book still right now, and that's the 13th Amendment. The 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment only really apply to the Africans, to the African Americans, and other groups are trying to co-opt it, and they're trying to utilize our suffrage to their benefit. The other thing that we have to make sure of, be clear of, is that we're no damn people of color. They can go to hell with that damn people of color. No, we are African, descendants of enslaved Africans. That's who we are. You can say, when you talk about indigenous or native, well, before you got the Ute coming over, that group coming over from Alaska, they met the African that was already here. So the first colonization of this country, of the, what we call the United States, was by Africans. And the Olmec Empire, which gave birth to the Aztec and Mayan, are a testament to that. And that the early Indians of America were either brown or red-brown or black. Those were the colors of the Native American Indians. It was only after the Dawes Commission, D-O-W-S, Dawes, that they allowed whites to pay $5, which is like $100 in today's terms, to be added to the American Indian list, so that way they were going to get the benefits that the Indians were going to get. Now, the Indians lost their war against Andrew Jackson and got their butts kicked off from the northeast all the way over from the Floridas and along the Keys and up in there with it. They made them walk all the way over to Oklahoma. But one of the reasons they got punished like that was that once the Emancipation Proclamation took into full effect, when the blacks from the South went to the North and forced the implementation of the Emancipation Proclamation, because the Emancipation Proclamation did not free the slaves in the North. It only freed those who were in the South that did not belong to the Union. So President Lincoln had no jurisdiction over the South, and he didn't have the authority to freedom, but mental freedom is real freedom. So the blacks in the South, when they heard and thought they were free, they made themselves free. When the blacks in the South heard they were free, they made themselves free and took the liberty of their freedom. But the blacks in the North were still enslaved mentally and physically, and that the Constitution did not protect them, because they were still three-fifths human. And that later came to be reinforced by the Dred Scott decision, D-R-E-D Scott decision, where the Supreme Court said that a white man is bound to respect no rights of a white man. a white man does not have to respect any rights of a black man, because a black man is three-fifths human, therefore on the level of property, and there's nothing that the United States government really have to respect from that black man. Therefore, we have to remember that when a black person is killed, it's not really murder, because they're three-fifths human, their property, so you can't kill property, and you can't kill something.
There you go.
So what you got to do is try them for a civil rights violation that placed them being able to, in 1968. So black people only now could be murdered when they're tied to the 1968 Civil Rights Bill. So prior to that time, blacks were not really considered being murdered, because how are you going to murder a cow? How are you going to murder a horse? How are you going to murder a sheep? And so therefore, when we look at this, we see that the mindset of America hasn't changed. The Supreme Court decision of Dred Scott has not changed. We see that the three-fifths human has not changed. We see that the 13th Amendment, if you go to prison, calling you a slave, has not changed. So our people now were once, through Emancipation Proclamation, mentally free, but now because of politicians and other blacks, we have now become mentally enslaved again. And though we have some mild freedom to walk around certain neighborhoods and certain communities and give money to different people from different communities, that is our reality as the African people or black people who were once the head and now have become the tail. But now with the change in time and revolution is brewing about, because revelation is brewing about. You have revelations bringing about revolution. You have revelations bringing about revolutions when the people are learning that the Messiah of the Book of Revelation had woolly hair, that the Messiah of the Book of Revelation had a deep voice like rolling water, that the Messiah of the Book of Revelation had man of his feet, burnt bronze skin, as I come out of the furnace, they were burnt. But also the Wycliffe, the Tyndale, the Geneva, also says that his skin was like the soot of a chimney. So the revelations, Jesus, the revelations, man, son of man, had an afro, had a dark voice, had a deep voice, had dark feet, burnt skin, and had eyes of flame like he's angry and pissed off when he comes back. Because when Christ comes back, he ain't coming back to love on nobody. He's coming back to burn and destroy all evil. And so what happens is I get in trouble because I tell the truth. That remember, there's Antichrist that's going to be in the pulpit. Satan is going to be in the pulpit. Devils are going to be in the pulpit. And how you will know them is by their fruit. How you will know them, that there has to be light in them, because they're not going to be those who are going to be smoking. They're not going to be those who are going to be drinking. They're not going to be those who are without wives. They're not going to be those who are fornicating. There's not going to be those who are adulterating. That's not what you're going to find in Christ's pulpit. If you find that in your pulpit, then you're talking about an antichrist, another Christ, something opposite again. And that's the truth. In the Book of Revelation, it's doing that. When you have the Euphrates drying up, like the Book of Revelation says, that more is coming, that the devils and demons are kind of being let loose on there, and those who are the true people of faith are going to know this and going to make sure that they tell everybody to the standard, which is the Bible, which is the Torah, which is the Quran, which is the Nag-Hammadi Codex. Those holy books are going to be held to the coming forth by day and night. That Bulge called, the Book of the Dead. It's not the Book of the Dead. It was their Bible that was found in the coffins with them. So they took their Bible to the grave with them. And that's where we get those texts, that information from. And so this reality that the people are discovering, that the Africans were the ones who were kissed, not just by God, but by the Son. God let the man, the first man, out of Ethiopia, out of Nubia, he took them and took that black dirt and kissed it with the breath of life, and man and woman became a living soul, and then went out through climatic adaptation, and lighten up in different parts of the world. And the epicanthal folds, Mongolian folds, or my Chinese eyes come out of, you know, that comes out of South Africa, come out of the Han people, which you call the pygmy people. It comes out of them. That's why you had Nelson Mandela look like he was Chinese, because that's an African gene that was had a benefit over in the Orient because of the ice and the light shining off the eyes, and it protected, you know, from snow blindness. So we went out in the world and lightened up. Is academically tighten up. And so these are the things that we must do for our children, for our people, and for our families, for our mothers, our fathers, our sons and daughters, that we must teach them to believe in themselves. Remember, if we teach them self-esteem, then they can dream. If we teach them self-esteem, then they can dream. And we're not teaching that. Now, all our youth should be overrunning with jobs now. They should be working two jobs like they're Jamaican and like on Living Color. All our jobs, all our youth should be able to just turn from one job to the other job, and that where they're off the street so they have things to do. The younger kids should be having, at all the different parks, should be having things that they're playing with, summer camps there that are free for them to have them tied up. These are the things that our kids should be doing. These are the things that the adults should be doing. Adults partying up, you know, on Facebook, stuff like that, that's showing that you, excuse my language, pissing on your kids. That's showing you pissing on your kids. You can't talk about the kids dying when you don't have love for yourself, love for your history, love for who you are. If your crush doesn't look like you, there's something mentally wrong with you. If your crush doesn't look like you, then there's something mentally wrong with you. If your Messiah doesn't look like you, then there's something unhealthy about you. If your Messiah doesn't look like you, then there's something unhealthy about you. Your Savior should never be your slaver. Your Savior should never be your slaver. Your Savior should never be your slaver. So you must also tell yourself, I must break away and become mentally free so that my children could be free. I must break away and be mentally free so that the nation behind me will be free. So this is what we have to look at as of today, to become a free people. And we got to make sure that we have the black doulas in these hospitals, because they prolong the life of the baby and the mothers, because there'd be a set of eyes seeing them when they're trying to gently kill us. There'd be a set of eyes seeing that when they're trying to slowly and gently execute us, because mothers weren't dying. This is new. Our technology has got too much advanced for us to be going backwards. So it has to be a condition of the heart. It has to be an evilness of the mind to be able to kill black babies, black mothers, and then try to harvest them for organ parts. That would, or just try to decrease the black population so that the birth girth, where whites are not going to be the dominant whites, that is the issue. That's why you'll see Joe Biden talk about bringing Ukrainians over from Ukraine and put them on Medicaid and put them on Social Security, even though they never worked a day in their life in America, want to put them on Social Security because of their whiteness. Wow. And just to increase the whiteness in America, they're willing to do those things to, you know, to bring Afghans over here and give them $200,000 to try to get a start when they won't even give black people $2 to start. So this is our reality. So we must give birth to a new mentality.
There you go. I agree 100%, Dr. Tan, because I think that is so important. And some of the things that go on that, you know, is, you know, I think it's going to take us another 400 years to get where we at, you know, to even be recognized. I don't see any change because they got us so divided up. They got people who are motivated by money rather than humanity, and to me that creates a real problem. And I see where we could be different if we get out here and do things right. we got to love on our people. You know, I know all of them you can't love on, but try. You know, and you do that. You love because you take care of people who don't even have money or anything. You go out of your way to take care of people, and that's a blessing all by itself. Do you think that white devil wants you to do stuff like that? That's the worst thing you can do, help another black person. And they don't want you to do that. But, hey, I take my hat off to you, my brother, because you are way out there. You're the one who out there doing, helping this community like nobody else. And I'm proud of you. I'm proud to know you. My brother, hey, next week, same time, same station. Got to go, Doc.